Hello, I'm Michael Enright, and this is the Rewind Podcast. This week on the podcast, another gem from the CBC Radio Archives, first heard on Rewind, the radio program. I hope you enjoy it. Today, a rather special piece of radio that first aired in December 1958. It was part of the Project series of programs, which aired between 1958 and 1968 on CBC Radio. They were called Project 58, 59, 60, and so on. It was the legendary producer Harry Boyle who created Project 58 at the prompting of a CBC manager who said, "Do something that will bring a sense of excitement back to radio." Today, a sort of cross between documentary and drama, with a small-town Canadian actor who's trying to make it big in New York. We've been unable to find any credits or documentation for this hour, but from listening carefully, we believe that the actor is none other than Leslie Nielsen, of Airplane and Naked Gun fame. All the pieces fit. Nielsen was born in Regina. He did indeed go to New York early in his career. And later in the hour, you'll hear a reference to a Mr. Nielsen. But even apart from that, this hour is a great sound portrait of a New York that is no more. From December 1958, A Walk in New York.
Ever take a walk in the city? The city? Well, they told me you haven't lived until you've walked in New York. That's right. And you haven't hoped, suffered, or dreamed until you've set your feet in that place. Somewhere, I guess, amongst the dust and the glitter and the garbage, or somewhere in the sounds of the biggest city in the world, you might find what you're looking for, if you know what it is. I remember New York. I remember the way it was when I first came. And this story contains the factual sounds of that memory. You see, I'm a Canadian, and I wanted to be a great actor. I was 19 years old and green, ambitious, and scared, too. I was born in Regina, spent some of my early life in a little place just north of Edmonton, where the trains stopped twice a week. The population of my hometown was 75 people that year. So, I came, with one suitcase packed with the usual dreams. I came with $40 and no friends to that melting pot of 8 million human beings. 8 million plus one, New York. Great wide-open spaces of the Canadian West that I knew. Until I saw Grand Central Station, I suppose I never really knew what it meant to be alone. Ah, well, this was my entrance. Check my props, wallet, coat, bag. Here goes. Join the mob scene that flows up the marble staircase past those giant billboards of plastic and out through the 16 glass doors to Lexington Avenue. The wings of the greatest stage on earth. So this is New York. 42nd Street and Broadway. I remember that impression, the one that hits every newcomer like a tidal wave. The feelings and sounds and smells of all that humanity in a hurry. Rush, rush. Where are they going? And who knows me? I remember those garish neon rainbows blinking up there, and the moving lights that glare down on that human ant stream in the busiest and brightest and dirtiest trap in the world. Well, down to the subway with the rest of this man swarm and uptown to 135th Street. Where an unemployed actor can find a cheap room and unpack his dreams and settle in.
Hey,
Nobody could forget that first night in New York. I heard the muffled drift of late traffic filtering into my hole in the wall. $8 a week. And the restless blink, blink of the sign over the bar across the street. And the distant blues. And I remember most of all that awful wave of homesickness and the sudden longing for fresh air and clean sheets and someone. It was a long night, that one. I tossed around. I scratched suspiciously. I waited. I didn't sleep. Oh, but I was far away from the warmth of those people who loved me back home.
You save a dime when you take a walk in New York. There was a sign in the shop of my street that read, "Shoe leather is cheaper than time." So early next morning, I walked the 8 concrete miles toward a Saturday noon destination with a producer I'd read about. I was going to make my first fortune on my feet.
Shine your shoes, brush your coat. Make you look like a New York sport. How about shining, mister? Hey, miss, one shine. Shine your shoes, brush your coat, make you look like a New York sport. Cold out. Getting cold out here. Get a Boston gloss over here. Step in some water and it won't come off. Shine them up here.
It seems they're always changing the face of Manhattan Island. Yesterday's brownstone is today's new skyscraper. Build them up and tear them down and build them up higher and higher and wider. And everywhere, every day, I heard the drilling of those street crews somewhere. Pounding through the pavements, ripping up the streets. You know, there are peepholes in the fences around the building projects. Any sidewalk superintendent like me can take a look. Nice idea. I talked to a member of the working crew that morning. Hey, fellow, what do all the people who live around here say about all this noise?
Things thrown out the window at us, people curse us and call the cops sometimes, try to get it stopped. We have a permit, from the city to do it, so there's nothing they can do about it. Well, we usually have a stock answer for them. We always tell them that we lost a quarter here about 3 years ago, and the taxes has. Yeah, we're looking for it now.
I walked in New York and saw colors and races and shapes of humanity I never knew existed. A study of people is a business of an actor. I knew that, and I tried to learn about them. These assorted humans seem patterned, molded like the outside face of the city. Harsh, tough, abrupt, very self-contained compared to me, then. But they had a way to them. I'd say to myself, now don't let all this change what you are. Today, I'm going to walk slow. But the infection sets in and your step quickens to the beat of the rhythm, faster and faster, hurry to eat, hurry to learn, hurry to know New Yorkers. So maybe they'll hurry to know you. I'm here, New York. I'm part of this traffic now. Oh, yes, the traffic. As I walked, I heard the voices of the taxi drivers shouting their opinions in a crosstown traffic jam.
Easy, I can straighten that traffic out for 48 hours.
What would you do?
The more parking lots in Midtown, the heavier traffic there is. Do away with your parking lots in Midtown from 14th Street to 59th Street. No parking allowed in the daytime, only after 6 o'clock. There's you solve your whole traffic problem. If you or me can't know that we have nowhere to park it, we're not going to bring it in there. But if Mr. Ashmer Kassar knows he's got a parking lot, he can afford it at buck two, he's going to bring his car in. That car doesn't stop him from coming in. Without the car, he'll have to come in just the same. That's the only salvation. Do away with your parking lots at daytime, and you got no traffic problem. 85.
I mean, I tell you, buddy, driving my cab, it's a wonder I don't knock out 47 different people every day. I mean, they run out across the street over here, over there, inside, outside, upside down, the whole thing. I mean, you can't trust them.
I know. I mean, I was a pedestrian myself once. Oh, boy, I tell you, if you're not born with an ounce of self-control, you should drop dead. You know what I mean?
Taxi! Hi, taxi!
I'm sorry, lady. I'm on the way to the garage. Pedestrians. So who even knows how to walk around?
But I knew how. Cross town from 6th Avenue along 46th Street to the producer's office.
Nothing today. We'll call you. No, sorry. Mr. Capel might see you in 10 days or so. Yes? You're a Canadian actor, are you? Any experience? Well, just fill out the details on this form. There's nothing just now. Just leave your name, address, and phone, and should Mr. Capel require your type, you'll be notified. Next.
Hi, Doll. Have anything for me?
Sorry, Mr. Hunter. Nothing today.
Don't call us. We'll call you, buddy boy. Guess you noticed, kid, eh? She never looks up at you, that one. You know, in the theater around here, it's 10% work and 90% chasing around these producers' offices trying to get by young dragons like that one. Me, I've been a Broadway actor for 20 years. Done 16 shows, 14 of them flops. Character bits, you know. Some TV, but, that live stuff is dying right now. Oh, well, we gotta keep selling all the time. Oh, say, kid, if you want a lesson in salesmanship, you take a walk over to Orchard Street. You know where that is. Or get over and listen to some of the Broadway pitchmen. If you're learning the business around here, try the pitchmen, boy. They're the busiest actors in New York.
We're going to get started with some of the household merchandise. There's a toaster that sells for $24.95. We'll take a dollar here. And then there's a little traveling alarm clock with a jewel movement. For luminous hands and dial, a dollar for that one. And of course, we have the cameras, expensive cameras going into the bidding. This one here is very simple to operate, and we'll take a low offer for that one. And of course, there's carving sets and steak knives. Now just let me talk. Let me do the talking from now on. You're not going to run in and out, are you? Well, I have to say, right, you're not double popping, James. All right. Okay, of course, when you went out, you took 6 people with you before. I've got to get an audience. Here we have a little iron. This happens to be a traveler. In fact, it's called a little traveler. And the cord and sells for about $1 a dollar.
Atlantic Bank, Chase 250, sell them out. On Cabinet, Holbrook, get them out. Atlantic Bank, Chase, get them by 250. Chase 2.5, bring them out. Holbrook, Sports, Cabinet, Shade by 250. Very great chase. Get him by 2.5, sell him out.
Get him. Yeah, very fine. Big him out.
Chase 2.5, big him out. Get him by 250. Holbrook Sports Gabbity.
Yep, big him out, yes.
Trade by 2.5, sell him out. Get him out. Very great chase. Sell him out, 250.
Get him out. It was a fine line. I live as a pen that hasn't got the feature of a number on it, but it gives you any sort of line without changing the point. Now, if you understand, realize, and appreciate a real good value, and if my physiognomy is not too conspicuous to be comprehended, I'm going to clarify to such an extent that each and every individual standing here at the present time can very well afford it. I'm going to give it this Parker 51 type. Now, don't forget, you can take my pen and bring it into any pawn shop. Ask him for $10, see how quick they'll chase you out. But you ask him for $5, they may give it to you. Look, and today I'm not going to charge you no dollar bills for the pen, but the first lady or gentleman gives me 25 cents, gets the pen. And I think it's worth a quarter to anybody. By golly, that was a heavy quarter, thank you. Everybody gets the same chance. Here's another one like the last one. Look, not to discriminate, to make fish of one and flesh of another, believe you me, as long as you live, and may you live as long as you wish, and don't forget all the money that you spend with me goes to a good cause, because my wife wants money, the butcher, the baker, everybody wants money. Look at this, you can write Yiddish, you can write English, you can print, you can sketch with this very same pen. Can you show me another pen? Regardless how much you may spend for it, we'll give you this service and satisfaction.
I'm Michael Enright, and you're listening to the Archives program Rewind here on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius Radio 137. Today, an hour that first aired in December 1958, called A Walk in New York. It features a striving young actor who's trying to make it in the big city, an actor whom we believe to be Leslie Nielsen.
Then I walked on the east side,
where the children of this city world play the old games in a setting of stone and grime and shadows. I heard these kids in the streets with skipping ropes and bouncing balls, and I thought of home and the childish chants that were happy ones for me, too, when I was very young and not alone in the biggest city in the world. Am I supposed to come out now, little girl? Where to in this place you lucky kids call home?
She borrowed a one, she borrowed a two, and kissed it on to one of you.
I won't go to Macy's anymore, more, more. There's a big fat policeman at the door, door, door. He'll pull you by the collar and make you pay a dollar. So I won't go to Macy's anymore, more, more.
I heard bongo drums pounded by two dark-eyed boys sitting on an open doorway, framed in garbage cans and the day's washing strung high from the windows. That evening, I went back to Times Square through the theater district. I was on the outside of those stage doors, and I was hungry. A dime for a coffee, donuts 2 for $15, and a hamburger at Walgreens. 30 cents. Save your money, young hopeful. 55 cents is a day's eating. And after dinner, it is curtain time on Broadway.
Going in now to the Canadian City. 10 cents and 2 for $15. 10 cents and 2 for $15. You want two, Sarah?
I wanted to buy a flower, even one of those gardenias browned at the edges. But I had no girl, no job, and no part to play. Not yet.
Ben Shahn's souvenir program of the world of Shalom Aleichem. Attaining a complete program of the show. Production notes, pictures and background of the cast, a full commentary on the entire performance, and 20 original drawings. Tickets, please.
So, past the bright marquees, like any tourist staring at posters, staring at the great names that were only on a wall away, reading what Brooks Atkinson said about this and Richard Watts said about that. And then the doors burst open at 11, and I heard the most wonderful sound of all. Before the crowd came out and newsboys hawked the early editions.
Monday, Cape Salt, Times Tribune, American Newsmirror. Monday, Cape Salt.
Times Tribune, American Mirror, Newsy, the morning paper. Times Tribune, American Mirror, Newsy, the morning paper.
To 52nd Street, and the nightclub dives for tourists and the Barkers.
No waiting, gents. The first show is on, there's no waiting. Presenting Louis Defeat. There's no cover in the middle at the bar. That's right, you can buy a drink at the bar and see the complete show. 90 minutes of entertainment. Presenting Louis Defeat, an all-girl show. That's right. No waiting, it's on now. In fact, it's the only show on the block for the next 75 minutes.
Uptown by midnight, with the sounds in my ears of every night of fun in Manhattan. Then I came back to my room, to sleep, perchance to dream. A symphony of shrill neighbors arguing through the darkness of a Saturday night. I remember the sounds of Sunday morning in New York City. The Salvation Army band on the street corner.
Join with us and sing now this beautiful old verse. Sing them over again to me.
Evangelist near Central Park assailing the ears of passers-by.
Now I can stand here and explain to whoever will listen that Jesus Christ satisfies, saves, keeps, and satisfies. I can tell you that he came into my heart, took my sins away, gave me peace, gave me the assurance of eternal life, spending eternity with him. But until you place your faith and trust in Jesus Christ for yourself, until you bite the apple for yourself, so to speak, you'll never know how it tastes. And so I admonish each and every one here to taste and see that the Lord is good. Romanism, Roman Catholicism, Protestantism, Judaism, Jehovah's Witness, Mohammedanism, none of it can save you. There's no religion, no denomination on the face of God's earth that can save a soul. It's the blood of Jesus Christ that was shed on the cross of Calvary. And unless a man places his faith and trust in the shed blood of Christ, there's no hope. That's what the Bible says.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks,
sir.
For the privilege.
In conclusion, we have here free some Gospels of John, and we offer them to you free of charge with one stipulation, that you promise to read it.
A storefront church service down near the Battery, selling that old-time religion. Outside Carnegie Hall before the Sunday afternoon concert, an old Italian fiddler plays his own tunes across the famous path of Menuhin and Heifetz.
And I'm Michael Enright. This is Rewind, the archives program here on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius Radio 137. Today from the program, Project 59, A Walk in New York. It's a sort of oral portrait of the city through the eyes of a young up-and-coming actor, whom we believe is Leslie Nielsen. It first aired in December 1958.
In Harlem, Sunday is a time for happy singing.
Drive through the world, the Lord is high.
But Sunday in New York can be the hardest day for the lonely ones. I remember it was that first Sunday that I met a neighbor in that rooming house of mine. A pastor on the stairs, a little old lady, dignified and shabby, and alone. I smiled at her, trying friendliness in a city of unfriendly, made some remark about the noisy cats outside last night, and I opened the floodgate of her dearest memories.
Oh, my thistle cat was wonderful. His name was Thistle Blossom, and he named himself because his fur was so soft, like that of the purple part of a thistle blossom, and his little fingernails were like the prickers around the outside. And he got so that he knew everything. He could do all sorts of things, and he could almost talk. Thistle was a wonderful little cat. He knew so much. He had better table manners than the majority of children. I taught him to eat slowly. When he's a little kitten, I just let him take one piece of meat at a time, and I'd tell him to chew it well, and I'd make my jaws go as though I was chewing. He learned what I meant. He'd stop chewing if I said, all right, he'd swallow it. If I said, chew it some more, he'd chew it some more. And he could take the tin cover off a jelly glass. He'd paw it with his right paw and tip over the glass, then put his left paw on to hold it, and then he would claw it. He got the cover off. Then he'd look up at me and smile. He'd curl the corners of his mouth up and back when he'd smile. And he knew a waltz when he heard it on the radio. He'd put his paw on my foot and sit down in front of me. That meant pick me up. So I'd pick him up and waltz around the room, holding my arms. I'd jiggle him, and he liked that. And Thistle died March 12th, I think it was, or 11th, 1929.
After the little bars open, the lonely ones come in for a drink or the jukebox or to talk about the inarticulate dreams of the beats and the long hairs. I heard them, for by listening, I hope to find out who I was, too.
I want to be a big writer. I want to be something like the Theodore Dreiser type. I mean, the things that I try to express to people and try to paint pictures, something like that, I just can't do because I try to show people life. But the more I try, the more I fail. What I want to bring into people is, why do people suffer? Why do people have to starve? And I see people around me who I think are artificial. And the more I try to see these people as being artificial, they just don't come into being into my life. Because the more I want to write about how a person starves and how a person feels and how a person sits around. I mean, you come into seeing that people sit and talk and they feel that they're somebody big, but they're not big. They're just artificial. They're pseudo-intellectual. They read the New Yorker magazine. They read Vogue, but they can't even buy the clothes that Vogue shows.
And have you got any solutions?
Solutions? I feel that if a person was common in towards each other, that they would solve this problem, but they don't. I mean, they read all these fancy magazines. They read Saturday Review, which I think is a good magazine, but they don't practice what all these magazines feel. And you see all these girls walking down who walk up in the big high heels, but they don't think they're somebody. I mean, they're artificial. I mean, they don't impress me in the least. I mean, they only know themselves, but they don't think about the next person, how they feel.
Hey, 6 foot.
Huh?
Yeah, you, honey. You want to buy me a drink?
Well,
Maybe you'd like to come home with me?
Well, I'm sorry. Thanks anyway. I'm not working just now, you see. I'm broke.
Huh. Poor kid. So, all right, I'll buy you a beer.
After a few weeks, a pattern emerged in my beginner's life. Study, sleeping, and the rounds. Almost a routine. And I reached out again and again for work.
Sorry, Mr. Capel has nothing today.
Oh, it's you again.
Yes, I thought maybe...
Nothing. Try again next Thursday, 4 o'clock.
That time the secretary actually looked up. But it was never boring, and only sometimes sad. I began to accept the City of Wonders, and it began to accept me. I began to feel the beauty in New York's varied colored sounds and sights. That Italian street festival. The day I met my first friend. Hi, little girl. What do you like best about the parade, huh?
When you're at a parade, it seems that you would like to be in a parade, because when you're right there, it seems as though you just could walk right into the parade. And I like the colors of the costumes. And when the soldiers and the drums go by, I like the colors of their uniforms. The music I like because it sort of makes you want to march in the parade, because it's so musical, you want to just march.
I learned to like the whole parade. I got to know the city's landmarks and her characters, like Moondog. I remember asking this blind man in the long robes what he was.
I'm what you might be classified as a street musician, street player, and I sell records also, my own recordings. I must play at night because the stores are open in the daytime and the doorways are not available. And the crowd that I want to reach is out at night. That's the necessity end of it. And I'm inclined to do things in my own fashion, regardless of conventionality. I'm very much influenced by one of the fables of Aesop about the miller and his son who took the donkey to market. And the moral of it was that he who tries to please everybody pleases nobody, not even himself. And that is one of my tenets I go by.
And that night, Riverside Way, I heard this individualist pour out his music on the weird instruments he makes. And the background of riverboats on the foggy Hudson. I heard the loudspeaker politician from an election car passing my own street.
We want the old custom of the janitor collecting the garbage every day. My opponent has no program. His 10 years of inactivity, unavailability, and futility have demonstrated that he has no program, that he is disinterested in...
And a comic chorus during a lunch break in the garment district on 10th Avenue.
The clockmaker's union is a no good union. It's a company union by their bosses. The right-wing clockmakers and the socialist fakers are making by the workers double crosses. The Hill quits, the Binskys and the Thomases are making by the workers false promises. They preach socialism, but they practice fascism to preserve capitalism by the bosses. Oh, ha!
You're listening to A Walk in New York, a program that first aired on CBC Radio in December 1958 and features a young actor who, to the best of our knowledge, is Leslie Nielsen. I'm Michael Enright, and this is Rewind here on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius Radio 137.
A well-dressed woman at the next table in Longchamp's uptown.
Riverside Drive. On West End Avenue and on Riverside Drive, the houses are very beautiful and very well kept. Between the streets of West End Avenue and Riverside, the houses are filled with Puerto Ricans. They dirty the steps. They sit all day in front of the house. They make lewd remarks when I pass by. I can look in the windows and see them living together in filth and in misery. I don't like to see this, and it bothers me. I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm just going to let it happen. But I wish they hadn't come here in the first place. They aren't welcome. They don't want to learn how to speak the language. And it's a shame that they don't stay in their own country.
And at the delicatessen on the corner of my street, my grocer friend talked to me when he wrapped up my cold cuts, along with his day's philosophy.
The man, within Diana Street, there was a storekeeper like me, and two young fellows went and hauled him up, and they killed him. They shot him.
Yeah.
He died. Before he died, he says, I want to tell you, he says, before I die, he says, was white boys killed me, not colored fellows. You know what I mean? That the man was a conscientious man, that he says they might blame on the colored people. That was the object. He was a Jewish man. My milkman told me.
Mm-hmm.
See? So that was the object, because every little thing happens, you know, they blame on colors. You see, I see them, because this son of a... or whatever they care. I don't care. I mean, my own kind is just as bad. My own child will be a thief. He's just as bad as the next one. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's a white, color, black, whatever it is.
I remember a song of local pride in the Bowery that's been sung in the pool halls there for 30 years.
Should the ladies be in danger when the flames around them roar, we're the lads who fight through fire and smoke for a rescue safe and sure. But when we march on a Sunday and the mulligans beat tattoo, we're good old stock with a cobble rock and a length of gas by two.
We can lift the Brookman guards if they'll only show their cards. We can run like the devil when the ground is level for about 400 yards. And the girls, a little tears, they're in love up to their ears when they see the style and smell the hairline of the Bowery Grenadiers.
Mr. Baroni, and how did the Bowery News get started as a newspaper?
Well, actually, I think the real origin goes back to the time of the Big Trouble. The Big Trouble is a hobo expression meaning depression time. Back in 1932, when I was on the bum, I stood one snowy day in the municipal shelter breadline at East 25th Street, known as the Docks. The snow was coming down pretty heavily, and we were rubbing our hands together to keep warm and huddling up sort of close together to ward off the cold winds. I turned aside and spoke to two friends of mine in the line. I said, someday we might write about all these things. There's a lot of drama down here in the Seamy Side. I think the public would like to read about all these goings-on.
Who buys most of your newspapers?
Well, here's a strange thing about the people who read the paper. It's bought by the general public, people in all walks of life, even people on Park Avenue.
Do you think the characteristics of present-day bums are any different from the bums of yore?
Well, I note a more sodden type of derelict today. That's true because, unfortunately, they're drinking a lot of Sneaky Pete nowadays. Sneaky Pete refers to the cheap pint bottle of wine, usually Muscatel or port. Now, the reason they prefer the Muscatel or port is because, in the words of the vagabonds, the stuff has a greater kick.
Is the quality of derelict getting lower now, do you think? Are they less literary?
Well, in the old days, I think you had more educated hobos on the road. Of course, now there are very few hobos on the road. A lot of some of the hobos have become rubber bums. That means hitchhikers instead of grabbing the boxcar route. I think that the quality has lowered in a sense. I think we don't have so many of the old-time philosophical hobos around that we used to have, say, 30 years ago.
To get back to your newspaper for a moment, where do you get most of your material?
The people who write for the Bowery News are people who have lived it. Hobos who've knocked around the country, beat their way from town to town. People on the Bowery, some who have education. Now, it may surprise you to know, there's quite a few people on the Bowery who were pretty well educated, some even with a college background. I even knew one man who was formerly an instructor at Columbia University and NYU and Hunter College. Wrote two volumes on Shelley, the great poet. Graduate of Oxford University. I knew Dan O'Brien, an intellectual vagabond, philosopher, was quite learned, could discuss art, music, mathematics, things literary, etc. So the more intelligent types from Hoboland, the Bowery, and the down-and-out world in general, right?
In the past number of years, with so many colorful people living in the Bowery, there must have been a lot of amusing incidents.
We took a dozen hobos and put them into two taxi cabs, and we took them to the Waldorf Astoria, Suite 1438, of the famous Waldorf Astoria Hotel on Park Avenue. We held a hobo convention there. Some Debbies crowded around us and said, "When are you coming back again? We never had so much fun." A hotel detective came up there with the assistant manager, and he said, "Boss, what'll we do? All these hobos holding a convention here." So Ted Hastings says, "What the devil can we do? It's a peaceful convention." The hobos were sprawled all over Fort Suite 1438. One was on the phone demanding room service, and we had a great time there. 1932, January of that year, real frosty cold morning. I was really shivering, hungry, nowhere to sleep. I looked at that big hotel and I said, "My, I'd like to be in there." So I said, "Someday I'd like to come back there." That's why I came back there with a dozen hobos. It sort of appealed to me.
We can lift the Brooklyn Guards if they'll only show their cards. We can run like the devil when the ground is level for about 400 yards. And the girls, a little tears, they're in love up to their ears when they see the style and smell the hairline of the Bowery Grenadiers.
Then, one evening, I was invited to a party, my first New York party. A college friend of mine arrived from the West, and he took me up to International House, where students of many nations get together under one roof. Beer, sandwiches, and a record player. And a place for you over there on the floor, friend, next to the kid from Puerto Rico, who was translating his own native music for me as I came in to join.
I will change Puerto Rican chickens by frozen chickens in the ice boxes here. When I saw the snow coming down like coconut flakes from heaven, I was going crazy. My soul was very disconsolate. I won't change Puerto Rico by 4,000 New Yorks.
I remember a happy group of boys and girls singing a song from their homeland in Nigeria.
Bye.
And over in the corner, there was the most beautiful girl I'd seen in New York, Italian-born, and mad for those tenor arias. She explained the words for me.
I had a little donkey, but truly sweet. They killed him on me. My poor little donkey. What a beautiful voice he had. He seemed like a great tenor. Little donkey of my heart, who shall help me to forget you? And when he sang, he used to do. Little donkey of my heart, who shall help me to forget you?
A couple of dental students offered their idea of Native American music. What a party!
Oh, hey,
well, aren't you Mr. Capel's secretary?
Well, what are you doing?
You remember me?
Sure, you're Nielsen of the Canadian Mounties, aren't
you? Yeah. Hey, how come you're here?
These are friends of mine. How about you? Honestly, it seems I can't go anywhere socially without meeting you actors.
Oh.
I like this kind of clam bake, sort of cosmopolitan. It makes me feel at home. I like music, you know?
Hey, where's home? I mean, aren't you a New Yorker?
Born in Montreal.
Hey, no. You're Canadian, too?
Yeah.
But in that office, you seem so...
Well, don't look at me like that. We're all human, you know?
Sure.
Say, you know one thing Canadians have got in common with Manhattan?
What's that?
Well, we grabbed our territories from the Indians, and no matter how hard we try, we can't give it back.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the oldest joke in New York.
So I was finally home away from home. And I knew then, sooner or later, that New York would find me, as I finally found New York. New York is an up-and-down adventure. There are the lucky few who've got it made, came to the city, and struck it rich enough to move out to suburbia. In New York, there is a gambler's choice in the chances you can take. The biggest chance of all is the one that catches you in the city stream and carries you on down or on up, but never free of this river. And there are those who never find the dream, but huddle in the canyons where smog and towering buildings shut away a view of the sky. But I remember the feeling that night when I knew suddenly what I would always think about New York. Back home in Canada, you can lift your arms and stretch out. But there in New York, you can stretch your arms so wide, wide, as far as your imagination can carry you. Big city, busy and tough, but you can reach out and you can find yourself somewhere in those millions, somewhere in the souls and sights and sounds of my city.
Thank you.
92. He got a single and a double, and he drove in the Giants' first run with a long fly to center. Brooklyn leads it 4-2. Blanca throws. There's a long drive. It's going to be, I believe. The Giants win the pennant. The Giants win the pennant. The Giants win the pennant. The Giants win the pennant.
Me?
Number 8.
Coming. Hello?
Mr. Nielsen?
Yes?
Hi, Les. It's Mr. Capel's office calling.
Oh, yes. How are you?
Can you get down to his Broadway office at 9 tomorrow? I think he's got a bit for you.
Oh, yes. Fine. Thanks. Thanks, Miss... Hey, what is your name?
9 sharp, okay? Good luck.
Spoke. Get your shine ready, huh? Shine your shoes, brush your coat, make you look like a New York spoke.
Take a walk in New York with me. Listen where you can go in the biggest city in the world. Just take a walk. There's a lot waiting for you if you know where you're going.
First aired in December 1958 on the program Project 59, that was A Walk in New York. It featured a young actor who we're pretty sure is Leslie Nielsen. Nielsen started his acting career as a, quote, handsome leading man in an industry overstocked with handsome leading men, according to one critic. But he really hit it big in the 1980s with Airplane, The Naked Gun, and Police Squad. Nielsen is still working these days based in Los Angeles.